The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with Get Reading for Friday, December the 11th, 2015. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetarlhurstend.com. I'm delighted to be joined once again by Get Reading's Charles Watts. Charles, hello.
Dan, how's it going, mate?
Not so bad, mate. Not so bad. I half expected this show not to happen because, as we talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago, wacky things tend to happen when we agreed to sit down and record this. And sure enough, last Friday, that wacky situation was Steve Clark getting sacked.
Yeah, nice and quiet, wasn't it? Nice and quiet. Yeah, slightly inevitable, you got to say. I think, obviously, the QPR result seems to be the last straw, but in the whole build-up to that game, you kind of got the impression that it was a really big match for Redden and Steve. And the way it ended, the crowd reaction that followed, it didn't surprise me that on the way to work and in Friday morning, I got a phone call tipping me off that something was about to happen.
He sounded an absolutely beaten man in his radio interview with BBC Radio Berkshire. I texted a few people saying it sounded exactly like Nigel Adkins did after that Birmingham defeat. And it was just an untenable situation.
I think it was, and it is. I wrote a piece on it just after. I think he's not really got anyone else to blame but himself, because I think given everything that happened with the Fulham link, I think he made a rod for his own back, and the only way he was going to get out of that was results. And unfortunately, the form that his team were in, he wasn't going to get those results where they were going to have to suddenly really change their fortunes around in a short space of time. And, you know, they got the win against Bolton, very unconvincing it was against a team that everyone's beaten. And then, obviously, Nottingham Forest and QPR, they didn't get anything. And like I said, after that full-time whistle at QPR, I think. And like you said, the press conference afterwards, I mean, I didn't hear the Tim interview, but I had a bit of a tap for tap with him as well when we spoke. And you could tell, I mean, he was very defensive and everything, but I think he probably deep down knew that result was probably going to cost him his job.
Yeah, summed it all up, really. The man who a couple of hours before had been voted the player of the month by the club then drops a clanger in the last minute to cost him his job. So just about sums up the last few weeks, really.
It was an awful mistake from Al Habsi as well. And I think the more you watched it, the more you think, oh my word, how have you let that through your hands? It was harder almost to let that in than to save it. I think it just summed up, like you said, it summed up the current situation, the current mood at Reading and the way things have been going for him. And yeah, I mean, I bet Steve, when he saw that slip through his hands on the dugout, I'm pretty sure he probably thought, oh, well, that's me done for.
I don't think Jonathan Bond or Riley Al-Habsi are going to be on Clark's Christmas list, because you think of how different his job could be if some of those errors hadn't happened, if we were still in the League Cup talking about a quarterfinal or a semi-final, if we'd won at Sheffield Wednesday, if we'd held on to that lead at Nottingham Forest and even got a point or more against QPR, I'd probably still be in a job.
Yeah, but I think he's got himself to blame, because he had a very good goalkeeper at the club last year that I'm pretty adamant that he could have kept if he really wanted to, and he didn't. He let him go, and he's changed things around in the goalkeeping department, and it hasn't worked. And, you know, Redden is still scratching around. And the fact that every time one goalkeeper makes a mistake, you're having to talk about possibly bringing the other one in to give the other one a rest. I mean, it's not ideal, is it? It's just not a good situation to have goalkeepers like that. And, you know, Redden had a fantastic goalkeeper at the club who, like I said, I pretty much convinced and adamant that he would still be here if Steve had worked a little bit harder to keep him.
Yeah, and that's just it. It was sort of death by a thousand cuts for Clark, really, because it wasn't one particular thing. As we said, it was the Fulham talks, it was the poor run of form, it was the signings not working out. Just all these things come together. I don't think there was one thing you could point and say he needs to go for that. I just think it was a massive sort of, I don't know, a lethal cocktail for him.
Yeah. I mean, it was. I mean, I did think, I like Steve and I thought he was a decent manager, but things were just going against him. Like you said, his choices hadn't worked. And although I still think he probably, you know, he could have turned things around. I think, like I said, I just think everything that had gone on in the weeks leading up to his dismissal just kind of made it inevitable. I think the Fulham thing was the final straw. I just think when you lose the fans, that's it. You're not going to, you can't really stay. You're not in a tenable position, really. And he had lost the fans, not all of them, you know, some supported him and they've made that clear, but he had lost quite a lot of the support by going to talk to Fulham. And from when you do that, you're digging your own grave, really.
And that's modern football, isn't it? I mean, we can talk for you like, I know Johnny, Tyler Sen podcast co-host fame, he was angry and saying, oh, it's modern football, you know, it's shocking that fans like this. But just look down the M4, look at what's happened at Swansea. Gary Monk going, and he probably still had the backing of a fair amount of fans, club legend. If even he can't survive that, then there was really no hope for someone like Clark.
Yeah, I mean, football it is very short term as of now because of the money that's involved. It's just plain and simple, and you know that you're very rare you're going to get your Arsene Wenger's, your Alex Ferguson's. You know, people who are going to be there for 10, 20 years. It's just not going to happen. You just look at the lifespan of an average manager now. It's pretty much what Steve Clark had at Reading, maybe just a little bit longer. So it's just if you don't get results, you're going to get fired. It's just it's a job. They know that when they take work. And I suppose Steve Clark will say, well, that's why I wanted to go and speak to Fulham. And in a way, because he knows full well if all it takes is a couple of bad results and suddenly his job's gone at Reading. But and so he'll point to that and say, well, that's why I was right and I felt it was a professional decision to talk to Fulham. So I think you have to look at it both ways.
Absolutely. Well, fact is, Clark has now gone. He's left, as has Kevin Keane, his assistant. In temporary charge is Martin Kuhl, who we'll come on to in just a moment. But the big talking point this week has been who's going to take over. And it seemed, Charles, earlier this week that Brian McDermott was nailed on to get that job, but there seems to have been a hiccup. What do you know?
There has been a hiccup, and I can't really tell you too much more about it because I don't really know what that hiccup is. He was going to be appointed on Wednesday. It was Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. It was happening. Everyone was just waiting for the announcement, and media across the country, myself included, had the tip off. It was happening, and then suddenly, as the day went on, was still silence. Nothing happening, and then we got a sort of shout that nothing was going to happen that day, and that's it. And so we're still waiting. It's what exactly has caused the delay? We don't know. I certainly haven't heard that he's not getting it. So in terms of that, if I had to choose now who the next Reading manager was going to be, I'd still say Brian McDermott. But why this delay is happening and what has caused an appointment which was going to be announced on Wednesday to suddenly be pushed back? Only I guess we'll have to wait and try and find out if that happens. My hunch is, and I spoke to you about this before we started recording, that something has held it up on the Thai side of things. All it takes is one person on the board, one of the owners, to suddenly have a little bit of cold feet about appointment and it sort of puts a kibosh on it because everyone has to agree. There's so many people at this football club now that have to agree for something to happen. And my hunch is maybe someone has thought, hold on, we could get this guy. Why are we doing this so quickly? And it's put a kibosh on things and they're taking their time. But like I said, I'm guessing on that. I haven't been told a definitive reason for why Brian wasn't appointed when he was due to be on Wednesday.
Well, there's been a few other names sort of in the frame bouncing around from the bazaar to the likes of Dennis Bergkamp to some of the more left field ones like Oscar Garcia, who posted a cryptic tweet I saw the other day saying on my way or something like that. Who do you think these other names are in the frame, if there are any?
Again, I'm not sure, so I don't want to. I'm guessing that Garcia is one because I know they did speak to him, and but I know that he's been speaking to other clubs as well. So whether it's definitely him, I'm not sure, but I do know that they've been speaking to him. Bergkamp, as much as I'd love that, it just doesn't seem. It doesn't really ring right with me. I think over in Holland, if talks would progress and he was on a short list of three, I'm pretty sure that would have emerged on that side of things over in the Dutch media, and it hasn't. And so I'd maybe steer clear of that one again, as much as I would love it to be the case.
Is Nigel Pearson still in the frame?
I don't think so. I think that ship has sailed.
Oh, thank God.
He was. No, but don't hold me to that. You know, I said on Wednesday Brian McDermott was about to be appointed, and it hasn't happened. So anything can happen. Things can change in football. But I think that ship has sailed. I think they were. In the original time of Clark's talking to Fulham, Nigel Pearson was pretty much the first point of call. But I think, as has been with other clubs, it seems to be that he's not too keen on coming without, his full backroom staff, who seem to be at Leicester and cost a lot of money to get out of Leicester, and it's putting clubs off. It seems pretty bizarre that's the case, because he's going to end up stopping himself getting a job anywhere if he keeps doing that. And that does seem to be the thing that's holding Pearson up getting another post.
What are your thoughts then? We'll go back to the front runner then. I mean, the bookies have suspended betting on this, so it still seems, as we say, that McDermott is the leading contender and should be appointed, barring any ridiculous hiccups. What are your thoughts then? Obviously, you weren't covering the club a lot during his previous reign, but from what you've heard, speaking to players and fans and whatnot, what are your general feelings on if McDermott does get the job back?
Well, the players that played with him absolutely love him. I mean, they run through walls for him. Like you said, his time was in between my two spells reporting on the club, I left just as Brendan took over and I came back just as Nigel took over. So I completely missed. I watched it from afar, and I came to the occasional game, and but I didn't watch them week in, week out. And it's tough for me to judge. Yeah, I don't understand a lot of the criticism that comes away. Like, I've seen people saying they'll give up their season ticket if Brian gets a job. And ridiculous. I don't quite get that, because I look at that and think, the guy's the second most successful manager in Renton's history. You just look at his CV. He got the club to a playoff final. He got the club to a league title win. And he got the club into the Premier League and two FA Cup quarterfinals. And it just seems... I'm really surprised by some of the criticism that I've seen come his way. But again, I didn't watch him week in, week out. So I don't know. You know, a lot of criticism get levelled at the style of football. But, you know, it was a winning style of football, wasn't it, until he got to the Premier League? And I suppose that's what people point out as well and say, what if we get back to the Premier League? But the fact is, we're not there. We're in the Championship exactly. at the moment. And it's you're looking quite far ahead if you're already thinking about what we can do when we get into the top flight. But so it's tough for me. I mean, I just, like I said, I spoke, the players who played with him will run through walls. The amount of messages I've had this week from players who are no longer at this club, who have, you know, finding out that Brian looks like he's taken over, have been getting in touch with me going, is it true? Is it true? Oh, it's brilliant for Reading. It's brilliant for Reading. You know, they love him. And if he can, he's got such a quality squad. If he walks into this squad, he's got a great squad. If he can real build that team spirit that he built last time he was here, then there's every chance that Reading can get promotion.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. You know, obviously from watching and covering the club through McDermott's reign, on the Tarlest end, I can see why some fans are upset and don't want him back. Some of the football we played in the Premier League especially was bad. He was a bit naive with some of his substitutions, some of his team selections and tactics, and things with the media fell apart. We had rows over Adam Federici, Danny Guthrie. We had an Alex Pearce contract situation that was ridiculous as well. So there were lots of things going wrong. But in hindsight, knowing what we know about Anton Zingarevic and what was going on upstairs at the club, it does paint him in a much more favourable light. And as you said, just look at his Championship record. The man took us from nearly the relegation zone when Brendan was sacked up to ninth and flirting with the playoffs for a bit, then a playoff final, then promotion. He's done fantastic work. Can absolutely understand why some fans are reluctant and say, oh, well, you never go back, it's not the same. But, you know, you've got to hope. And bear in mind, he has been working since he left Reading. You know, he had a spell at Leeds, but that was under Massimo Cellino, where I don't think any manager survives. And then he's been working with Arsenal, and I don't think Arsenal would be employing him in such a key role in their scouting department if they didn't think he had a lot to offer.
No, and he would also, you sort of look at that and think of the links he's got with Arsenal, not just Arsenal, but the players you'd have watched over the years doing that role with Arsenal. He's going to have a contacts book stuffed full of potential players to whenever he does return to a club, if it is Reading or someone else. So it's a whole massive base of knowledge you'll have there of scouting, not just in England but across Europe, which would be really handy.
Well, I was going to ask as well. I mean, some people are saying, oh, well, no club's touched him since he left Leeds, so he can't be that good a manager. I mean, what do you say to that? I noticed you had a tweet on what he was sort of saying about his time at the moment at Arsenal.
Oh, he's loved it. I mean, again, that's not come from him. It's come from someone that I know is close to him. He's absolutely loving it, and he's in no rush to leave and go back into management unless it was the right club for him. And obviously Reading, he's got such an emotional attachment to that you'd look at it and think that probably is the right club for him. But he's in absolutely no rush to leave Arsenal. He's really enjoyed his work. As you know, it's a great job, isn't it? I suppose you haven't got the pressure of management and all that comes with that. You're pretty much guaranteed yourself a paycheck ongoing. I mean, you're not really going to get the sack unless you do a bad job as a scout. So it's sort of guaranteed income. It's, like I said, no pressure. You're travelling the world watching some of the best young talents in football. So it's a brilliant job. And the fact that he might want to give that up to come back to Reading shows that this is an appealing job as well.
Absolutely right. Well, let's leave that. Obviously, we'll see how that pans out. But it very much looks like, subject to any late shenanigans today, that Martin Kuhl will be in charge of the team tomorrow. What do we know about Martin Kuhl?
Yeah, well, he was told on Wednesday night that he was going to be in charge, which again suggests, you know, something happened on Wednesday during the day that they were still thinking that Brian was going to be in charge of that game on Saturday. But something happened during the day that stopped it. And so on Wednesday night, the phone call was made to Martin saying that you're going to be in charge for the game now. And so he's been preparing the team. He's been preparing all week, but from Wednesday night onwards, he's been preparing, thinking, right, this is I'm going to be on the dugout on Saturday, so this is the team I'm going to select. He says it's not going to be wholesale changes. He says he's not really going to come in and do that. And I think that's a wise decision. I don't think you come in as a caretaker straight away, just ring the changes. I think we'll see the team set up pretty similarly as they were under Clark. I think that's right. So maybe I could see someone like a Beater, who he's probably worked with an awful lot of times. You know, maybe he'll come back into the side ahead of Taylor. But other than that, I think it's going to be pretty much the same way that we've seen Reading play recently. And hopefully, he just said he wants to tweak a couple of things and get this team back firing again. He reminded them yesterday that they were second in the table not long ago, so they're a decent team. And he also reminded them they got to take some responsibility for what's happened in the last few weeks. Obviously, Steve's fallen on his sword, and Steve's ultimately the one who pays for the poor results, but the players are the ones who are out there on the pitch on a Saturday and a Tuesday night, and they're the ones not performing and getting the 3 points. And he was brave enough to go in there and tell them that, which I respect him for, because some caretakers might go in and not want to talk so strongly to a group of lads, but he's done that, and hopefully it might have a result.
Did he give any indication if he's interested in the job on a permanent basis? Obviously, he's very much an outsider, but did he
comment said that, on it? If he got a few wins and they said to him, take it on for a little bit longer, then obviously you'd think about it. But I don't think he's expecting himself to be in the running for the job, and I don't think anyone really is. I mean, they're certainly searching for a new manager. You might have to have it for this game and possibly Hull on Wednesday night, but I can't imagine that there's a way, even if he wins a couple of games, that he's going to be the next full permanent manager at Reading Football Club.
Yeah, and he's done such a fantastic job with the under-21s. Obviously won that League Cup against Manchester City a couple of years ago and then went on to lead them to promotion last season. So he's got a good CV working with some of the younger players. So he's no stranger to winning football games. So that's what Reading desperately need to do on Saturday against Preston. We need that win. Team-wise, I mean, you said there won't be too many changes, but how's the injury situation looking? Obviously, we had Paul McShane missing against QPR. We've got Stephen Quinn on the long-term absentee list, along with Aaron Tischboller. How Robson Kanu, though, he came off the bench, so presumably he'll be in the running too.
Yeah, he'll be in the running. McShane's back fit. He's trained all week and he's good to go, which is good news. But other than that, it's kind of as you were. Obviously, Aaron and Stephen are closer, but I'm certainly not expecting either of those to be involved yet, but they're getting very close. I think within a fortnight, we certainly could see Stephen Quinn back involved, which would be a massive boost, and Tish won't be too far behind him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just before we come on to the prediction for that game and talking about the whole game as well, one transfer rumour, I noticed it cropped up this week, started, I think, on Team Talk and was picked up by a few local papers up in the Midlands. Nick Blackman being looked at by Derby. Any substance behind this, or is this just web talk?
I think it's just web talk at the moment, but it wouldn't surprise me if there is something behind it. I mean, he's out of contract in the summer. He's one of the Championship's top goal scorers, so I'm sure there's an awful lot of clubs monitoring his situation. But I think it'd be crazy for Reading to let him go, unless they got some monumental bid in January. I mean, it's just worth seeing out the season, really, given that what's on offer in the Premier League next year. What's the point in accepting maybe a £1 million bid or £2 million bid or something like that for your top goal scorer right now, and if you've still got a realistic chance of getting yourself in the playoffs? So I'd be very surprised if Reading accepted a bid for Blackman in summer, in January, even if his contract situation doesn't look like being resolved anytime soon.
Absolutely, you've got to go for it while you still can. Right, so let's move on to that trip to Deepdale tomorrow. How do you see it going? I mean, Preston are a team that struggled when they first came back up, obviously coming up from League One last year, but they really bounced back. I think they've only lost 3 out of the last 9. Really in good form. They won at Burnley last weekend as well. So they're going to come here. They're going to host us full of confidence. How do you see the game?
I think they've only lost 1 of their last 9. I'm
looking
around.
They've only won three of the last nine. But lost one of the last 9. Yeah.
A very difficult side to beat. I've got to say, I didn't until I looked at those results yesterday. I just figured, looked at them at 18th in the table, thought they're probably struggling, sort of lose every other game, and I couldn't believe it when I saw they'd only lost 1 in the last 9. So they're really in form. They're a difficult side to break down. They don't concede many goals. They've actually conceded the same amount of goals as Brighton. So they're very strong defensively. So Redden, they're not going to go up there and roll them over by any means. The fact they went up and won 2-0 at Burnley last weekend shows that they're a good side who are full of confidence at the moment. So it's going to be a really difficult game for Reading, and they're going to have to be bang on it if they're going to get anything out of it, I have to say. It's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, goals seem to be the problem for them. I don't think they've scored more than a single goal at home all season. There's a lot of 1-1s, 1-0s and 0-0s in there. So if Reading can get that opening goal and get into a lead, that they do stand a good chance. I know it's Will Keane banged home a great goal against Burnley last Saturday. A guy we were linked with at one point as well. So it would be typical of his
goals. Yeah, I mean, I think Jermaine Beckford's injured and been injured for a while, and he's obviously got quite a few goals last year. Joe Garner's not really hit the goal trail like he did last year either. So, yeah, like you said, they are struggling a little bit for goals. But Reading, you say if Reading get in front, they should be right. But I think they got in front recently. A few games, haven't they? Haven't held on to the lead. So I think if they've just got to, yeah. I think they're going to struggle, I've got to say. I I'm just not sure, given everything that's gone on. And I think, you know, I'm sure they'll go out there and play as well as they can for Martin. But I think it's been a real difficult week for everyone at the club and for the players who I know, you know, a lot of them are Steve Clarke's players. You look at a lot of the foreign players you brought in to suddenly think, hold on, the manager's gone now. What's going to happen with me? So it's going to be a really difficult game this for Reading. I think if they can go up there and get a point, it'll be a good result.
Absolutely. Well, prediction league time then. Where the money is this season, you are still at the top. You've had a bit of a wobble recently, like Reading, but you're still hanging on. You're a point clear of me at the top, and then another two back to Johnny, and then a few back to the likes of Westy and Handbag. So on this week's main edition of the show, which you can still download at thetalison.com, I went for a 2-0 win for Reading. Johnny said 3-1 to Reading, and Westy went 0-0. So the Preston win is wide open to you at the moment.
I'm not going to go for a Preston win. I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to go for a 1-1.
Yes. 1-1. Okay, very good. After that, then, it's another TV game. I'm sure Sky relished picking the QPR game, given the entertainment on offer. Hopefully, this one will be a bit better on Wednesday night. We won't get a chance to talk before then, but just general thoughts on Hull. Obviously, a team that were very much in promotion contention. Still are, really, but they've had a bit of a wobble. They've lost two in a row. They haven't won in three. But they do play Bolton this weekend, so presumably they'll be playing Reading on the back of a win.
It's strange, isn't it, in this league, is that everyone suddenly started looking at Hull as they raced to the top of the table and started nailing them on for automatic promotion. And as soon as you do that, they start slipping up. It's just such a crazy league. But they are a very good side, very strong side. Kept a big chunk of the squad that came down from the Premier League. Obviously lost some players like McShane and Quinn. But again, going to be a real tough long trip for Reading on a Wednesday night. And it's tough to... I don't really want to predict. You're going to have to come back to me during the week.
No, but that's fine.
Hopefully there might be a new manager in place for that one. And you have the real sort of new manager bounce syndrome that could come into play. So I think there's going to be such a lot that could happen at this club between now and Wednesday night that looking at that game, being able to predict how it's going to go is very, very difficult.
Yeah. Well, hopefully... I said hopefully we can sit here and talk in a couple of weeks' time just before Christmas about two straight wins. But... have to hold my breath on that one.
Well, if they get as I said, out of these two games, that would be one hell of an achievement, I have to say.
I think they can realistically get... I think they'll get four. I really do. I just got the feeling that Clark going will just give them a little bit more freedom and just sort of press the reset button a bit.
I think I'd be much more confident if they had a new permanent manager in place by now of that happening. But I just think they're in that sort of... in a state of limbo at the moment. And we spoke to Chris Gunter yesterday, and he was adamant that it had been a really good week's training. Cooley had come in and done a really good job, which I'm sure he has. But I just think it is that limbo situation. There's no matter how much you think a bloke's done a good job, if you know he's not probably going to be your manager, that there might be something in it. And I think some players might still be a little bit disappointed in Steve's gone. Some of the foreign players might have on their mind what their futures could actually hold at this club. So I think, I'm not quite as confident as you on this one on Saturday's game.
Well, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully, as I said, hopefully we can be sitting here talking just before in our final show before Christmas about a win. But speaking of Christmas, before we go as well, I wanted to plug the fact we will be recording our Tyler Sen podcast Christmas special on Monday at the Spread Eagle Pub. Charles, I've not even asked you about it, but are you free? Putting on the spot live on air.
I'm going to have to sit on the fence on that one and do another 1-1 draw.
Oh, there we go.
I'm not sure.
Well, regardless, if any of you out there listening fancy turning up, I said it is the Spread Eagle. You might remember it is a stone's throw from Elm Park in Tylehurst. Everyone is welcome. We'll be doing our awards, including the much coveted Hal Robson Canoe Underachiever of the Year award, which is wide open this year. There are quite a few candidates for once, and I don't think Hal is going to win it.
No, I don't think he should win it. I'm not sure he should win it. I'll have to put my thinking out on for that one. But
The bookmakers have made Jordan Obita the early favourite.
Touch hearts, perhaps.
I don't know. He's lost his place to Aloney from League One.
Yes, but that is Aloney who won the league title, the championship title, not too long ago. So,
even so.
Yeah, touch hearts, perhaps. I'll have to think about that.
Yeah, have a think. Yeah, we'll get your input on the awards, whether you're there or not. But as I said, Monday, we'll be recording from 7:30 down at the Spread Eagle. Charles, in the meantime, obviously, people can follow you on Twitter @Charles_Watts. And obviously, stay tuned, getreading.co.uk. Hopefully, you'll have all the big news and an interview with the new manager.
Hopefully so. Touch wood. It's been a strange week trying to keep up with the way it's all gone at the moment. So yeah, I'm actually looking forward to being resolved and focusing on football again.
Yeah, and before we go, can I just point out that I believe I said on air on this show, you can go back and listen to the archives, that Arsenal would indeed qualify for the Champions League, and lo and behold, you've done it.
Thank you for bringing that up. Thank you for bringing that up. It was a good night. Enjoyed it. Greek gods. I love that headline on the back of the Sun on Thursday morning. Always good to see.
Sure, you can't wait for that.
Our inevitable Barcelona draw and go out in the round of 16 yet again.
Indeed. Right. That about wraps it up. Thank you very much for joining me, Charles. As always, have a cracking weekend. I said hopefully we'll be talking about 16.
All right, Dan. Speak to you next week.
Take it easy. Ta-da.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@ The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/ The Tarlhurst End.